This is Scott.
This is Pat.
We've got a great program again lined up for this week for you. If this doesn't sound exciting enough, we're going to talk about life insurance, variable life insurance being recommended for an estate plan.
It may or may not be the right thing. We're going to have that discussion.
Yeah, you might actually hear us talk about life insurance in a good manner.
We're also going to talk with a widow who is unfortunately faced with making some very, very important financial decisions and kind of how we tackle that.
Yeah, so stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
We're glad you're here. The weekend of February 18th, post-Valentine's.
Oh, yes.
All recovering from that, I would assume. Anyway, both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays working with people like yourself, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. Weekends, if you're listening to us on via the radio through KGO in the Bay Area or KFBK in Sacramento or KOA in the Denver region or
on your
through
a podcast,
yeah. Which I think we, last I looked, we've got, I think we have maybe more listeners on the podcast than the radio. I don't know, but
that's what the people marketing tell us.
Well, yeah, because they want to keep their job. Every week, it looks like more and more. They see these charts and graphs.
They show you charts and graphs.
Fortunately, we're finance people, so we can drill down to the
measure,
numbers.
Look at numbers. We don't believe all that hype associated with those marketing people. Those marketing people. Anyway, thank you for joining us.
You know, it's funny, though. It's a tougher, it's a total side note. It's a tougher time to be in the marketing business than maybe 15 years ago.
Oh, because of the
measurement of it all.
Yeah, and the number of media outlets.
Correct.
And the micro.
It's so easy to track things online.
Yes.
And you have an ad on Google or on Facebook or you can measure that stuff really well.
Yes.
As opposed to
the old way, which was you run a television ad or you buy an ad in the newspaper or the yellow pages.
The yellow pages. That's what your dad did for,
For years and years and
yellow
years.
Pages.
Sold yellow pages.
Now when I get yellow, once a year I have a yellow.
I put them right in the recycle.
I'm insulted that they throw this trash on my driveway.
Well, I don't think they call it trash.
I'm thinking, why does that business have a right to come and just throw something on my driveway? Private property.
You have got to get out a little bit more often, Mr. Hanson.
But who needs a yellow?
Why don't you just let it go? That is just, you have got to bring it down a notch. If that's bothering you, you've got a pretty damn good life going. Am I allowed to say that?
Yes. Are you? I don't know. I guess the relaxation of words. There's less swear words.
Okay. So.
Anyway.
We're going to take your calls.
Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Take your calls. 888-2-HANSON. 888-242-6766 if you'd like to join the show.
Yeah, that's 888-2-HANSON. It's H-A-N-S-O-N.
So. This comes from the Government Accountability Office.
And that's always exciting reading and stuff from the Government Accountability Office.
Also known as the GAO, which is accountable for the government. So they have run into a problem now. More and more people are now having...
They've run into a problem, Accountability Office?
The Accountability Office has identified a problem with more and more people having their Social Security payments garnished. Debt collectors are garnishing more and more Social Security payments. What do you think for?
What debt collectors can garnish Social Security payments? Child support.
Student loans. Think about that. Student loans, Social Security. And why? Well, college loans can only be discharged in some court cases, serious disability, and that can follow you the rest of your lives. It also follows you if you are the co-signer for that debt.
That's right.
And little Jimmy or Jill doesn't make the
name Jimmy and Jill anymore.
All right. Nick and...
There's Trevor and Megan.
Okay. Trevor and Megan.
What's another
couple? Madison.
Maddie. Yeah.
Yeah. Maddie.
Trevor and Maddie. That's college age students.
Right. If they quit paying on their student loans...
There's no like...
Okay. It's like talking to a dog. Sorry.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Okay, so if you co-sign for Maddie and Trevor's student loan and they quit paying on it, you're responsible.
Yeah, that's right.
And parents and grandparents have assumed $67 billion of this debt.
That's a lot.
Most of it is for those people 60 or older. 40% of these borrowers are in default. Which means
40%.
40%.
And if it was some form of default, a private loan, they wouldn't have the ability to garnish
that
Social Security.
That is correct.
But
that
it's the government.
It is a
I got to tell you,
a student loan. It's student. So, what's the moral of this story?
The government
don't
shouldn't
co-sign. Well, you're not going to
the government shouldn't be involved in the student loan business.
Well, yes, that's,
but that's
actually it's driven up the cost of education significantly because the access to free or cheap money has driven up the cost of education.
But here's the story in this.
But here's the takeaway. Don't co-sign on your kids' loans. Go to an institution that doesn't require you to co-sign on
your
child's loans.
Have them go to a junior college if they don't know the
or get a different student loan that doesn't require a co-signer. They have them. You don't have to co-sign on every student loan.
Well, if you're looking for additional dollars once you've gone through the first round,
you might
that's
have
what
a
that is.
There. Yep. Don't co-sign up.
No, don't do it.
Don't do it. Unless you don't care about retirement.
Or you've got plenty of money and you don't care if you never get it back. If that's the case, then don't just give them the money.
Give them the money.
Then you don't have to worry about this whole thing.
Yes.
It's a real challenge, though.
Yeah.
And then not only we see that, there's also a lot of people in their 50s who've gone back to school, taken out loans to do so, thinking that it's going to yield a great career afterwards. And
doesn't always.
It doesn't always. Sometimes there's a health issue that might derail, or they just can't get the job, or whatever the case may be. And it's
yeah, and we talked about higher education on the show recently, last few weeks, which is it is going to change significantly, and the cost will come down just because of the way it's being delivered. University of New Hampshire, Grand Canyon University, name a dozen other online institutions. It's not the same college experience, but it's college.
Well, the question is, look, here's what we deal with a lot. We have people come and talk to us and say, look, I've got this one kid in college, another one about to go into college, one's about to go to grad school. I've got my own retirement issues I'm trying to figure out. I don't want to work here forever. I want to be able to retire. What should I do about these college expenses? And you know what? Here's the thing. If you've got plenty of money set aside for your kid to go to whatever college, great.
Have at it.
That's a luxury.
Have at it.
For a child to go away to school and live in a dorm,
yes,
that is a luxury.
There's no question.
And if you don't have the assets, and
you do what you do.
Go to junior. Look, I went as a young man. I didn't have money for going away to college anywhere. My parents would have laughed at me. I ended up going to a junior college. I worked. I had a little business I had. It took me 4 years to get through 2 years of junior college, but I ran a little business. Frankly, I think I learned more through the business that I ran over that period of time.
Was it that tree trimming deal?
Yeah, a tree
trimming
business.
What was it called?
Hilltop Tree Service.
Yeah, actually, that's not a bad name.
I bought it. I had no money, and I worked out a deal where I paid a percentage of gross revenues.
To the guy?
At a declining period of time, and then I sold it for cash.
Not a bad deal.
Helped finance my last 2 years of university.
You could swing by this weekend after the show and do a little pruning in the yard?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I love the pruning. Yeah. You know, it's kind of ruined my...
Can you still climb? Can you climb trees?
Well, I know
You're a climber. Scott's a little guy, but he's strong, like an ant.
Thanks, Pat. Like an ant. Strong like an ant. I take that as a compliment,
like
too. I'm going to take everything as a compliment.
Okay, from now on, everything I say to you is a compliment.
Well, I found if you take everything in life as a compliment, things just go better, you know?
Okay.
Someone calls me a big such and such. Thank you. That's nice.
Back to the college funding. Be careful co-signing for any loans. Any loans. Not just student loans.
But there's no
loans.
Things have to change. There's over $1 trillion in student loans today. It's the model we currently have is not a workable model going forward.
That is correct.
There's not enough resources to pay for every student to go away, live in the dorms, party it up all night, and go to class.
I don't think that's the typical college experience, by the way.
You don't?
I do not.
I Skyped with my son a couple days ago.
It might be your son's college experience.
No. He was telling me that he was helping a friend at 3 in the morning who had puked in the bed, and he said he was doing laundry in the middle of the night.
Oh, that's disgusting.
It was disgusting because the kid had drank too much.
That's disgusting.
So, and he's at a fine institution.
There you go.
Bring him home because that kind of behavior.
Yes, that's going to stop. So,
anyway.
You joined the show, 8882 Hanson.
Yeah, I guess this is a financial program. I think we're talking about college costs. Do not jeopardize your retirement for a kid or grandkid's college. It does not.
Yeah, it doesn't always work.
And if you're trying to help them buy books,
great.
Great. And if you can help them financially, wonderful.
But there
and if
are,
you could pay for them to go to the best schools out there, wonderful. Most, if you don't have it.
Most people in the United States live within a commutable distance from a four-year university
public,
or college.
Public university.
Most people in the United States live, it's commutable.
That's true. Anyway, if you want to join us, you got to, would love to take some calls. The number to join Hanson McLean, and we're not, well, enough about the college stuff. Anyway, it's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. Well, let's talk with Linda in Loomis, California. Linda, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Linda.
I have a rental that I've had for many, many years. I paid $18,750 for it, so I have quite a bit of capital gains. But I understand there's such a thing as a Section 1031 exchange.
Yes.
And I'm kind of thinking about that if it would be available to me. So I want to know a little bit more details. Is there a period of time that I have to reinvest? Do I have to reinvest in the same type of home?
Got it.
This one is a single family home, and I'd like to do a duplex.
Got it. And the reason you want to make a change is why?
Why?
I don't like the neighborhood the old one's in now.
Okay.
And it's becoming more run down.
And what's the value of this home?
I would say about under $300,000, I'd say $250,000.
Okay. So we'll walk through what a 1031 exchange is.
And they could work wonders.
Yeah, just kind of a ballpark. And it's an unusual thing that they allow this for, they allow 1031s and something similar with life insurance and annuity contracts called 1035 exchanges. They don't allow it with stocks or bonds or mutual funds. Which are these tax-free exchanges from one asset into the other. And when Trump got elected, the big question was, are they going to overhaul the tax system? And you think, yeah, they probably will. And then I thought to myself, well, they'd be touching the 1031.
But he's been a real estate guy.
Right. Correct. So what this does is allow big, people like you, Linda.
Everyday people, and in addition, large companies.
To exchange something that is appreciated. Let's call it a piece of real estate, 1031. Let's say you bought this home for $18,000 and some change. It's now worth $250,000. You can exchange this into a completely different home without actually identifying any or paying any capital gains
on
this.
Total sense.
Makes complete sense.
And you can do it into a duplex.
Yeah, correct. Or many other types of properties as well.
Yeah.
So
the key is you need to use an intermediate. I've personally done a 1031 exchange, maybe more than one. But you need to have an intermediary lined up ahead of time, which is essentially, if you talk to your real estate agent or a title firm, they'll recommend one. It's not a big deal. You pay a small fee, essentially.
Oh, it is kind of a big deal because
it has to be done right.
And you have to be one that you trust, because there was a huge Ponzi scheme that went on a number of years ago with an intermediary that was actually pocketing the
money. You cannot take possession of the proceeds and must go to the intermediary, and you must have a property identified. Was it 180 days, Pat?
I think it is.
There's a period
of
time.
6 months or so.
Your best bet would be I'd start, and you can actually, if you had the cash, you could actually buy a property ahead of time and use the exchange as well. There's a couple ways to do it, but this is... makes total sense for you, Linda.
Absolutely.
Complete sense.
Absolutely.
I'd strongly recommend it.
So the intermediary wouldn't be a real estate agent.
No.
Are they attorneys?
Let me think. I did one. The last one was it in 2015. I'm trying to remember where I was referred to this firm. Someone referred, and I never met anybody there. It was all done online. They sent me a bunch of paperwork. I read it and signed where I needed to sign. It was not a big deal.
So, Linda, this is how I would find it. I would actually go to Google, and I would just type in 1031 Intermediary Sacramento.
Okay.
That's
or talk to a real estate agent if they've got one that they work with. It's very common.
Yeah. It. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And the bigger, the better. The bigger, the better. The bigger the intermediary. And I hate to say this.
The bigger the firm.
The bigger the firm.
Not the bigger the duplex she buys.
Correct. The bigger the firm, the better.
And as long as you invest all of the proceeds, it's not necessarily all the proceeds because if there's forgiveness of debt, it's another issue. You don't have any loan on here, correct?
No.
Okay. Perfect.
So no, as long as you, not after 50 years.
Well, so, yeah, hey, come on. Are you kidding? You unbelievable. People see that they've owned a home 50 years and they've got a huge mortgage on it because they use it like an ATM machine.
Yeah. 8 times what they paid for the house. Not unusual at all.
You don't have spinning wheels on your Cadillac Escalade, I'm guessing, Linda? No. So you've kept it. So as long as you invest the proceeds that or more into the new property, there's no capital gains. If it's something less than whatever you receive, that's considered boot and becomes taxable. But great. Makes total sense for you. Total sense.
Everything would be reinvested. So, okay.
Perfect. Love it. Perfect. Great idea.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Linda. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Okay. I will.
Bye-bye.
You guys take care.
You know, Pat, we haven't had as many. Remember in the 10 years ago when the real estate market was on fire? We had so many calls on this.
Like one out of four phone calls.
How long do I need to own a home before the capital gain?
How do I move these into the? Remember the tenant in common things were hot.
Yeah, you don't hear much of those.
Ah, thankfully
they were a ripoff.
They were a ripoff. Thankfully,
well, not maybe there were some out there that weren't. The ones that we saw were
the ones that were being syndicated were.
Yeah,
the ones the ticks that were taking place between brother, sister, husband, wife, sister in law, friend.
What?
There were smaller ticks. A tenant in common, which I think would probably turn out okay. But the ones that were dangerous were the ones that were being
pitched to everyday investors.
Correct.
Yes. Syndicate. I don't know if most of the people listening.
Oh, use the word syndicate.
What the heck is Pat talking about when he talks about
syndication?
So forget about it.
The word syndicate doesn't even sound good, does it?
Sin. Just break it down. Right there. Anyway, all right. If you want to join Hanson McLean, you can call us 1-888. We'd love to take your call, by the way. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, if you're like most of us, that actually your phone has numbers and the letters are tiny, it's 1-888-242-6766. And let's go to Inglewood, Colorado, or talk with David. David, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good day.
Hi, David.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. How can we be of service?
I wanted to talk to you about insurance in an estate planning environment. I know that you guys, in general, are not advocates of insurance. Of life insurance, but I've been speaking with some estate planners, and they tell me that my wife and I getting a variable life policy that pays on the death of the latter of the two of us and putting that in an irrevocable life insurance trust can be a good tool to increase the amount of money that you can convey to your descendants free of tax.
So can I ask?
Actually, let me back it up. It's not that we're not fans of life insurance. We actually are. There's actually, I believe, most people are underinsured. It's permanent life insurance that
is most
of the time is sold improperly and it's expensive. But
it can play a role. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Approximate net worth for you and your wife. Everything all in.
Everything all in about $30 million.
Oh, okay. You're a candidate.
Yes.
Absolutely a candidate.
I actually own a variable life insurance policy myself.
As do I.
Okay, so there we go. The reason why we talk about we hate it is it's so often sold, whole life insurance is sold to somebody as a retirement savings vehicle when they've not maxed out their 401k and their Roth IRAs and everything else they can do. And furthermore, when the estate tax limits went from 600,000 to a million. Now they're at about 5.5 million each. That means a couple can pass along $11 million. Most people don't have more than $11 million.
Yeah. So are they talking about you gifting or using the crummy provision, or they call rabbi trust as those words come up?
No.
Okay. That's pretty, I'm getting a little bit into the weeds. So the, what it gets down to is,
and is a good chunk of this either a business or a certain piece of property that you want to make sure gets maintained in the family?
No, not really. It's becoming a fairly diverse portfolio.
Okay.
A lot of some different real estate.
Is your plan to, how old are you?
58.
Okay. Is your plan for your children to inherit all these assets, or do you have some going to charity, or how's that structured?
Well, yeah, I think some would be inherited, some would go to charity, and I think some, my guess is we would end up chewing up before we pass.
Oh, I'd be surprised if you used a lot of it up.
No, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I would.
Good luck.
I would absolutely
unless
be surprised.
Unless you start buying Gulfstream jets every couple
I'd be,
of years.
I'd be surprised if you used a lot of it. The reality is, if you took a 5% distribution on it, that's $1.5 million a year, and most people can live pretty comfortably on $1.5 million a year.
I think, yeah.
It's $120,000 a month.
About $10 million.
What's that?
But $10 million of that is in homes and up.
Got it. Which you can consume, but still those appreciate over time. I actually think, you should explore it. I think it's a great idea.
It may or may not be.
Why? Well, why, Scott?
So the question: if you're looking for additional estate, some additional liquidity for your estate to pay estate taxes, yes, life insurance can work well. Okay, particularly if you don't live to your normal life expectancy.
Okay, I got that.
But if you end up living to
but
a normal life,
it's a second
life,
to die.
Yes.
So the chances of one of them living to a normal life expectancy improves with
absolutely
a second to die contract.
Right.
I can't think of a reason that I wouldn't explore it. I can't think of a single reason I would not explore it.
The only thing I would explore.
Is there a way that you? Go ahead.
Here's when it really works well. Let's say you have a piece of property that you want to gift to a charity today. But you're thinking, I don't really like the idea of that asset being out of my estate. You can buy a life insurance policy at the same time to replace that asset. That's oftentimes how people can see
it. Yeah, put them in a charitable remainder trust.
Or to pay, or if you have an illiquid portfolio and you want to make sure that this, because you'd have a pretty hefty estate tax if it went on to this. How far down are you in the estate plan as far as you both die today?
Where's the money go?
Who gets what?
Well, we aren't as far as we should be, but today, if that were to happen, it would all go to our children.
And how many children do you have?
Four.
And is there a vacation property that you would want to keep in the family?
There is.
Okay.
Yes.
And you might want to fund that.
Has that been addressed with the estate attorney?
We've really only had a preliminary conversation, and
I have
so we're really just starting to address this.
Okay, so don't identify the estate first and then look
yes
for a product to solve the problem.
Yes.
Right? Don't lead with the life insurance.
Yes. It sounds to me like you're talking with someone who probably specializes in estate planning, but is maybe an insurance salesman, which is maybe okay, but I think our advice would be to work with a good estate planning attorney. Let's figure out the plan first.
And then if you need a life insurance product to solve the problem, go there second.
Yes. And then I'm not sure if I'd use a variable product in this circumstance.
I don't know if I would use a variable product either.
What is a variable product?
It's, you mentioned earlier, you've got a stock portfolio. Just think about it as mutual funds and what they call sub-accounts. And rather than being mutual funds that you can buy and trade on the exchange, they list it in a menu of sub-accounts that you own inside of the life insurance contract, and you get those returns. They're typically a lot more expensive than what you could buy in the open market in terms of mutual funds, but it's just the investment vehicle inside versus a universal life, which has just
or a whole life,
just has fixed income.
If the markets do well, that's great. Your premiums are going to be lower in the future. if markets don't do well, you might find yourself 10 years down the road having to contribute higher premiums. That's why it seems like a strange product to use.
Yeah, I don't know if I would use a variable universal life. So go back to the estate planning. Decide what's going to happen with the estate.
I would get a good estate plan attorney. I would really focus on what should happen to the estate. You guys both die today. What should happen with the estate?
Right. So a whole life might be a better product.
Well, it might be, but you might not be a product at all. So yeah. I just did, my wife and I went through this. I have four children. I'm 54 years of age. We went through our estate plan last year.
And how much life insurance do you have for your estate plan?
I have none because my kids aren't old enough for us to quite decide, you know, where it's all
going. And for me,
go.
Not everything. The kids aren't getting it all. Yeah. They already know a good chunk's going to charity.
And I'm on the page with David. I'm going to try to spend it before I die.
Yeah, good luck on that. Anyway, hey, David, appreciate the call. We're going to take a break. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Taking the financially complex and making it simple. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
All right, welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
And by the way, Hanson McLean, some of you are newer to the program. Others have been listeners for years. Started in Sacramento over 20 years ago.
On the radio show.
Yeah. And Hanson McLean, we have three offices in the greater Sacramento region. And in the Bay Area, we have a number of different meeting locations and advisors in the Bay Area. And then in Denver, where we're on KOA, we also have a couple financial advisors and some meeting locations throughout the greater Denver area. So
we're in your neighborhood.
Yes. And so we don't, the show's typically not about promoting our firm, but thought I'd just throw
it
out
there. But we're here, and you're here, so why not?
Wait,
Scott, we are a business. We do give financial advice
good
on
advice,
the radio,
I believe.
But yes. At the same time, we got, you know, I got kids to feed. I've got a business to run.
No, it's not about feeding your kids.
All right, I'll give you that.
It's been a long time that you've been showing up for work, not about feeding the kids.
I'll give you that.
It's a bigger purpose than that.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
All right. So.
Yeah. You want to make sure that people get good advice, whether it's from us or someone else. They get good advice. We'd prefer it to be from us. But that they get
That's
good
right.
advice.
There's no question.
Because I see a lot of bad advice, and it's maddening. It's frustrating.
One thing that happens in our industry, I was going to talk about something else, but also this just reminded me of this. The big brokerage firms, the way their business models are, their financial planners, financial advisors, whatever they're calling themselves these days, they're kind of, think of them like little independent businesses. So they call it their own book of business.
Yeah.
Where they've got their clients.
So give me an example of these. What would be a big firm?
Merrill Lynch, Wells Fargo, Morgan Stanley.
Ameriprise.
Those are all big firms.
They're big firms.
Who else is a big firm?
Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo.
Edward Jones, big firm.
Edward Jones, yep.
All right. I don't know if Edward Jones does this.
I don't know if they do either. So let's leave Edward Jones out of
this. But we know the other big firms do. So the brokers are, think of them like independent business people, and they typically work as a percentage of the revenues that they generate. So whether they do fee-based asset management or sell insurance products or sell commission-based whatever, they get a percentage of the revenues. Well, what happens, these firms, the big firms, they're dependent upon their sales force, essentially, their financial advisors, to generate this revenue. That's how they get the revenue.
Yeah, because they get a cut of it, a split of it.
Yeah. So oftentimes they try to lure existing advisors to leave whatever firm they're at and join the firm that their firm to bring over a bunch of clients.
Business.
Yeah.
And how do they go about luring these financial planners, advisors, brokers to leave? Let's say Merrill Lynch and join Ameriprise or leave Ameriprise and join Merrill Lynch. How do they go about doing this?
Typically, and there's always exceptions to this, typically they will offer an upfront forgivable loan.
So it could be as much as $1 million, $2 million. It could be a lot of money based on the size of someone's book or business.
And they'll say, look, you come work for us. If you transfer in enough accounts, we will give you, let's just say it's $1 million, and as long as you are here in good standing, doing everything you're supposed to be doing, and hitting the numbers right and everything, we will forgive this loan over the next 5 years, 7 years, 9 years, whatever it is.
So
Every situation is different, so
they do the right amount of production in the first year.
They might get some additional bonuses by bringing over
assets. But the problem with this is it creates a conflict between the broker and the client. Because
the broker's got a big paycheck based upon how good of a job he or she can do in luring your account from the firm that it was to the new firm.
And how much fees that can be generated from that account.
Yes.
But the problem with it is that the broker isn't obliged to disclose the details of that.
That's the problem.
Upfront.
I think there's a new ruling that they have anything greater than $100,000, it has to be in footnote on page 22.
It's got to be somewhat, but they don't have to make it front and center.
No, there was
most of the time, you leave one of these big firms and join another one, it's all the same. They're not much different between the firms and these big firms.
Well, they'll say there's Salesforce. There's a lot of difference.
But there's not. You know that. I mean, everyone has access to the same products. Maybe
But here's what I want you to think about. If your advisor has left one firm and gone to a new firm, you might want to ask why that happened.
Why'd you move?
Okay. And what potential conflicts may exist that weren't there before? So here's some of the questions that I would ask if I were working with an advisor that moved to a different firm. Number one, did you receive an upfront compensation based upon some projected amount of assets or clients that you would transfer over with you? That would be of relevance, I would think.
Yes.
Right? Did you sell my account?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yes.
Did someone just buy my account without me even having a part of it?
Yeah. And I have to go through the hassle of moving my business.
So did you receive any? Is that in the form of just a pure bonus or is it a loan? Does it need to be repaid? And if the loan's going to be forgiven, on what terms? And are there any sort of production requirements? And what happens if you don't repay the loan?
Yeah.
Also,
just ask a bunch of questions. Ask a bunch of questions. Why the move?
Are there going to be, might you sell me some commission-based products that you didn't beforehand?
Yeah. If I was fee-based, are you now promoting non-traded real estate investment trust because it helps your bottom line when your other firm may or may not have used those?
I saw an advisor with one firm. He went to a new firm. I know he had some upfront, he or she had some upfront bonus paid. Then I saw, here's why I'm bringing this up. I think it was on Facebook or LinkedIn or something. I saw an ad that this gentleman was doing a workshop for non-traded real estate investment trusts. And it shocked me because I thought this person at the firm he was at before
would never have done that.
Would never have done that.
Yeah.
And now they're at this new environment.
They're selling non-traded, highly commissioned, non-traded real estate investment trusts.
So if your broker goes to a new firm, find out, look, are there some production requirements? Are there quotas? Is there payout based upon how much they generate? So are they going to be, is it as the year goes on, are they going to think, if I could generate just
actually,
a little more commission,
you
want
to check their background to see if they were actually pushed out of the old firm too. If they had some
regulatory.
You can
do that at Broker Check.
You can go to Broker Check. Or you can go to our website, moneymatters.com, and you can watch the liars, levies, and lawsuits.
That's not to imply that your advisor is necessarily a liar just because he or she decides to go to a new firm, Pat.
Could be. I certainly would conduct a background check on that broker.
Yeah, you would definitely.
Certainly go to the website, moneymatters.com, and watch the liars, levies, and lawsuits, because it's not going to hurt you.
So we are seeing, though, Pat, you're seeing what happens. Sometimes you see people leave the big firms, go to either an independent firm or set up their own shop.
Yeah.
As a registered investment advisor.
That's actually what you would.
You would be encouraged. If you have an advisor at a big firm.
And they go and open up Joe Smith's registered investment. Yeah, be like, good for you. Good for you. You're becoming more independent to serve the client's needs.
The independent to serve the client needs, not having...
Not to be beholden to another master.
That's right. That's exactly
right. That sounds a little harsh, though. To be beholden to a...
There's good advisors at corporates. Some of the big firms. There's also some lousy ones.
Yeah.
And there's lousy independent ones as well.
Anyway, it's hard.
Just think the independent model is cleaner. But if your broker leaves from one firm to another, just ask some questions about that. I think it'd be wise to do.
And... Go to moneymatters.com. And while you're there, you can actually check out our workshops that we have coming up on March 8th.
That's right. Another round of workshops.
9th, And the 18th in the Sacramento area.
Yeah, we had hundreds registered for our last rounds of workshops.
Yes. So we have them coming.
Several hundred, I believe, registered.
The week of March 8th and the week of, so March 8th, 9th, and 18th in Sacramento, the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, March 15th, 16th, and 18th.
I don't think it's 18th.
Yeah,
I
it's 18th.
I think it's the 10th, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, 8th, 9th, 11th,
oh, you're
probably.
Right.
8th, 9th, and 11th.
8th, 9th, and 11th in Sacramento.
Typo.
And then Bay Area.
Look, just think about it. Sacramento, the week of March 8th.
Okay.
Bay Area, the week of March 15th. Denver, the week of March 15th.
There you go.
Midweek and Saturday. Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Yes.
Get all the information at moneymatters.com.
You're so much,
go to moneymatters.com.
You're so much better at this.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank
you're
so
much. Better at this.
Anyway, we're going to take a call. If you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number to take to join us. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're talking with Laura. Laura, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm a little nervous, so I have a question. My husband passed away last May, and everything was transferred to my name, and his 401 is what I have a concern about. He had it on high risk, and in 2008, he lost a lot of money, so he put it in a Target 2025 and then a money market, 80% money market, and then the rest of it is in a Target 2025 plan.
Okay.
So it's not making, I mean, like, cents on the dollar.
Uh-huh.
And I want to invest it. I just don't want to lose what's left because it's not, like, a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what to do.
Laura, how old are you? Sorry to hear about your husband. When did you say he passed away?
Thank you. He passed away last May the 5th.
Okay.
I'm 53 years old.
And are you employed?
I do work for FedEx.
Okay. How much money is in this? Is it still in the 401k or did you transfer to an IRA?
No, it's in a 401k, but they put it in my name with his name attached.
Got it.
Until I figure out what to do with
okay.
it. But it's still in a 401. I don't know what to do. And it's got $70,000 in there. He lost $200,000. Back in 2008.
You know.
And he was so afraid to take it out. He had it in high risk. And, you know, back when the market was good, and then he lost all that. And so he took it off high risk.
Laura, do you participate in your 401k at FedEx?
I do, yes.
Are you comfortable with your options in there? I mean, do you have a target date fund in there that you might want to use?
Not really, because I want to change that, too, because I kind of put it with the same like his, because I don't know what to do, and you know he's not here, and he was going to change it and he didn't get a chance to.
So here's what your question is you just said I want to get a higher return but I don't want any risk is what I heard.
I don't want to lose like that one in 2008 everybody at the company at FedEx lost hundreds of thousands of dollars
across the world.
Yeah.
But had they stuck with that investment strategy going into 08, they would be so much further ahead today.
Had they not reacted.
So
right.
the investment
I don't.
What's that?
I don't necessarily have to make a, like, I'm not looking to get rich. I'm just looking to make a better investment.
So like that target date 2025 fund might actually been a pretty appropriate, and that is much less risky than whatever strategy was employed that took $270,000 and dropped it down to $70,000.
Yes.
That was obviously
way risky.
Probably a lot in FedEx stock, my guess.
It was very devastating. This, I wrote it down, 80.3% in the money market short-term reserve, then 6.9% in bonds and 12.8% in stock, which if you combine that together, it's in the retirement 2025.
So I would start with two things. First thing I would do is I'd probably transfer this over to your company's 401k.
That's what I would do.
So that you only have one pot of money you need to watch, right?
Okay.
And then
right.
And then I would put together a investment strategy for you based upon your risk tolerance. The problem is, I might as well be speaking a different language to tell you how to do that. Truly.
Yeah,
you're
for
not
most
gonna,
people.
For most people, you're not going to understand. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have our advisor in the Denver area. You're in Sacramento. I'm going to have an advisor in Sacramento actually, you're going to email over your choices in your 401k and they're going to do an allocation.
They'll have a conversation with you.
And they'll have a conversation and you're going to keep it at the company plan for right now. You're not going to move it over to our firm. We're not going to make that recommendation. Nope. But we want you to have it properly allocated based on your risk tolerance. So what you had before was you were driving 100 miles an hour and now you're driving about 3 miles or 4 miles an hour, and somewhere in between them, those two, is the appropriate allocation.
Right, and that's what I want. Like,
and we're going to do it.
Okay.
We're going
to
do it.
I really appreciate that because I have life insurance money and I don't know what to do with it. And it's, I didn't ever transfer it to my bank account. I left it in, they have their own bank.
How much, how much do you owe on your home?
Nothing.
Your home's paid for.
Yes.
Okay.
And I have over $250,000 in life insurance.
So one of the, are you putting the maximum into your 401k?
And by the way, I think you take the right step. Look, we typically advise people when they've been widowed is to take your time.
Yet no hurry.
There's no rush.
No rush whatsoever.
No rush.
You don't need to rush out and invest that $250,000.
Nope.
Take your time.
For the first year.
I mean, it is so hard anyway with that sort of a loss just to get your head in the right place. But to make investment decisions while that's happening is crazy. And any advisor.
I almost went and did something really stupid with a realtor and I realized, you don't give somebody a $10,000 and to wire it to somebody's bank account. And at the last minute, I backed out. And I'm like, I can't do that.
Thank you.
I get his pension from FedEx because he was with them for 28 years. So
good. We're going to put you on hold and get you, and we'll have a set of time where our advisor can help you with your that 401k and get it allocated.
Get it allocated correctly. Yeah. With a moderate risk tolerance.
Yeah.
In there.
Thank
so
you
so sorry about right, sorry Laura, about your
sorry
loss.
About
I
your
know
situation.
How difficult that can be.
Yeah. And you know we strongly recommend when someone's been widowed to do nothing for at least 6 months up to a year.
Yes.
Maybe even longer. There's
terminal illness in the family, a spouse. It's okay to not stay invested if it's creating worry.
You know, it's interesting. You said it's like I'm speaking another language. So just a couple days ago, I had solar put on my house a few years back. And this has been a big winter. And I've had some leaks from where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the roof guy pointing at the solar people pointing. Fortunately, the solar people, I think they're helping me out. But they came over and they were going to take off some panels. And the guy's describing the process.
And you're like, well, who cares?
The flashings and the such and such. And I finally said, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm thinking, and I really don't want to know what you're talking. I mean, it's like, I just need this fixed.
Yeah.
I just want my leak fixed. I want my roof to work.
Yeah.
And most people approach the financial plan. It's like,
I want it to work.
Exchange trade, an ETF.
Versus an actively trade.
iShare versus,
what's it matter, right?
Just, I want my money to work for me. I want to make sure my retirement
I want it to
account.
Be appropriate.
Yes.
And which is funny because she was on before on one, her husband was on one side of the spectrum and she completely on the other. But yeah, it is difficult.
I actually went
to lunch the other day with a gentleman, a friend of mine and his business partner, and they do hedge strategies for mortgage pools on interest rate risk. And I'm pretty fluent in the financial literacy. So he's explaining these hedge strategies that they're using, put and call options.
Yeah. And it makes sense if you're doing mortgage pools that you're trying to...
I understood about 80% of what the guy said.
A portion you didn't.
I just did not.
Well, it's because you don't do it.
I'm not in it every day. I don't manage hedge strategies for mortgage pools.
Correct.
Don't do it.
Well, that's kind of obvious.
Yes.
And by the way, if you're looking for hedge strategies
on mortgage pools,
Hanson McLean's not the
wrong place.
Yes.
Wrong place.
Yeah. So anyway, we've got it's a good time in our program where we are going, we're going to talk real advice. All right, so periodically we will have one of our own advisors, a Hanson McLean advisor, come on the program and talk about a situation that they're working with, an individual or family, and tell us about what happened. And so This week, we've got Lauren Williams. She's not only a certified financial planner professional, a chartered retirement planning counselor, over a decade of experience in wealth management, but she also teaches courses at UC Davis in their extension program to help students prepare for the certified financial planner exam. And I think it's a 2-day exam. At least that's what I did. It was not a long time ago, but it's kind of a big beast of a thing. So she helps making sure people are qualified in our industry. Frankly, that's what she does by speaking out there. So, Lauren, welcome to being part of Hanson McLean today.
Welcome, Jimlon. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. So, real quick, on the UC Davis, this certified financial planner, what is the process with that these days? Because we talk about the importance of it and why people should look for a certified financial planner, considering you actually teach the stuff.
Yeah.
What's it entail today?
Well, there's essentially four different criteria. The nearly 2-year-long program is required by anybody that is going to be sitting for the certified financial planner exam. So think of a graduate degree type program.
Okay.
Then there's an ethics component, meaning that there's a large background check. There is an experience component. So either 2 to 3 years experience actually doing financial plans and working with clients on those plans, and then the exam. So you mentioned the 2-day exam. I was actually the last of the 2-day exam takers, and now we have a 1-day, 6-hour exam that you can actually take in your hometown. You don't have to go out of town for it anymore.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. So that's what it is to be a certified financial planner.
A couple years of... We're going to talk a little bit about a client that you were able to help. And as Lauren shares the story, it is reflective of this client situation and may have nothing to do with your own situation.
Yeah. So tell us about a story here.
So I'm actually going to tell you two stories at once. I have two gentlemen, totally different investment spectrums, right around the same age, very different income and education levels. Both ended up with the same financial advisor, and both ended up holding the same investments within their accounts. The first gentleman was slightly under 60 years old, so rather than moving money from the 401k into an IRA and then investing, the advisor had the gentleman take a 401k loan to invest in what we call a direct participation program, which is simply a limited liability corporation where you're basically partial owner, but you have absolutely no say
in what
goes on.
He took a loan to do this?
What was the business?
He took a loan.
What was the business in the direct participation program? What did they purport to actually do?
Equipment leasing.
What was it?
Equipment leasing.
It was, okay. It was equipment leasing. How'd you guess? Because that's what's hot right now, because people are looking for yield. People are saying, hey, can I make this thing produce more income? And they say, yes.
Just don't hope you don't want your money back.
Funny enough, I got this thing that will. So he took a loan from the 401k. What was the second gentleman? Where did he get the source of money?
So he actually has a Roth account that has about 30% of it in the equipment leasing fund and another 40% inside of a real estate investment trust. Both lack liquidity. Sold by the same advisor.
Highly commissionable.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, there are some tax benefits to holding these direct participation plans or these limited liability corporations, right?
What?
You can deduct your losses.
You can deduct the losses, but can you deduct the losses inside of a Roth?
Yeah, but I would never. I don't care if what the tax ramifications. The investment's garbage. You don't.
Right.
You make the structure of the investment. You make the investment.
The structure
first.
Of the investment is garbage.
Garbage. Correct.
Right.
Being a limited partner.
Any tax ramifications that are there, you're essentially losing on the 7% commission, right?
That's right.
But the broker's book, the return on assets is looking pretty good if they're creating 7% commission off of the assets.
So let me ask you this: so they had the same advisor. How did they end up talking with you? How did they know they had a problem?
They came over here. One of them was an AT&T employee, and I happen to specialize in their plan. So I was meeting with him for his annual review. He brought statements, and I was kind of blown away with the whole 401k loan. So we were talking about cash flow issues.
And how did the second person come to you?
Second gentleman came over here himself, and he realized that he had gotten stuck in this illiquid investment and wanted to find out how to get out of it.
And could you get him out?
No, not really. Whenever it comes available, some of these contracts, they are contracts. They're structured so that you either have an end date or you can take out a percentage each year. So if there's like a clause where we can take out 20% a year for 5 years, we'll try to get all the funds prior to the maturity of the contract.
So what did we learn from this?
Never take a 401k loan to invest in anything else outside of the plan.
Thank you.
Yep. What else? Don't buy direct participation programs.
Don't buy direct participation programs.
If it doesn't price, don't buy it. If you can't sell it the very next day, don't buy it. That's right. I want to know what my stuff is worth. I want to know. And you never know unless it trades on an exchange or it prices on a
That's
daily
right.
basis.
That's correct.
Oh, I'm glad you were there to help them, Lauren. They truly.
Yes.
And it, was it just crushing to them when you just said they can't do anything?
Oh, that's always hard.
Well, you can, but it's going to take years to get out of these.
You know, we came up with a strategy and we're sticking with it. I mean, obviously it is not the ideal situation to be in as you're approaching that retirement deadline, that goal that you have. But we're working around it and doing the best we can to take the money out of these and put them into diversified portfolios where we can actually measure the risk.
Oh, yeah. Good for you. And do you talk about these sort of things when you're teaching your CFP classes?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Good. Oh, good.
Absolutely.
Good. Good.
Because hopefully we'll have a whole batch every year come out of not only good educated CFPs, but also understand some of the unethical things that occur in our
So,
industry.
Lauren, thank you for being a part of Hanson McLean, a great advisor at Hanson McLean, and thank you for all the work you do in the community.
Yeah.
So. I'm happy to be here.
All right, appreciate it.
All right, Lauren, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You know, Pat, I had I was fortunate enough to get in the business as the limited partnerships were falling apart in the 80s. And so I would remember reading magazines that would list the prices of people trying to get out of these things, pennies on the dollars.
Yep.
And I saw my first number of years was dealing with the kind of like wrap up of it all. Anyway, we're out of time. The music means we're out of time. Stick with us next week, same time, or get our podcast. Go to moneymatters.com. This has been Hanson McLean.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.